everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Brad Coates is back. Oh, he's been on my show perhaps more than anyone. We've been friends for nearly 20 years. Isn't that right, Brad? Nearly 20 years.
I would say yes. Maybe,
yeah, because it was 1999 that we first met, when the first edition.
That would be about 19 years, wouldn't it?
19 years, right.
And we're still friends, right?
And we're still friends.
That hasn't changed in 19 years. And I'm happy to be back as your guest on Love, Lust, and Laughter.
Yes, and I think our friendship has deepened, as many friendships do when you're honest with each other and trust and have some fun. We have some laughter, especially when we, Brian and I are going to go to Hawaii again this year, and we're going to meet up with you, Brad, and we're looking forward to that.
As am I.
Good. So, but Brad, of course, knows all about marriages and divorces because he's been a divorce lawyer in Honolulu, Hawaii for 40 years. And his popular book, Divorce with Decency, is now in its fifth edition. And that's terrific, Brad, that you have this book that's helped so many people now in its fifth edition. And I really like what Honolulu Magazine said. It's on the back of your book. Jewelry stores should hand this book out with the purchase of every engagement ring. Isn't that the truth?
Well, with divorce having become so prevalent.
Yes. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
With divorce having become so prevalent, it probably would be smart if people at least knew what they were getting into when they get married, because percentage-wise, it's a tricky bet, and there's ways to enhance the likelihood it'll work, and there's also ways to spot potential problems that may make it not work. So it is definitely a part of American society that needs to be thought through, and a lot of times people will spend more time researching, what new car they're going to buy rather than trying to figure out what really is going to happen once they get past the initial blooming romance of love. I saw that guy last night on the Emmys, proposing to his wife on national television. And,
yes.
And, I assume they've narrowed down some of the variables, but sometimes it is easy to get caught up in the excitement of let's make it happen. Let's go to Vegas. Let's get married. And, you probably need a little more thought than that.
Probably, especially since close to half of today's marriages end in divorce. And even that doesn't mean that couples who stay together are happy. So we're going to look at, and this is, you always come up with the greatest topics for our shows together, an analysis of the pros and cons of three of life's most crucial choices. Number one, to marry or not. Two, to remarry or not. And three, to parent or not. These decisions can affect your life hugely. So why don't we begin to talk about it? You've got some very interesting statistics, but we're going to elaborate on the stats because then they come to life.
Well, the fact of the matter is that most people have, sort of the romantic dream. If you talk to most, even most millennials who have gotten pretty cynical about other aspects of life, they all think that they're going to get married. They all think they're going to find their soulmate. It's a stated goal by young people that yes, that's something they hope to see happen. They hope to have kids. They go along with a lot of what's been the previous generation's party lines as far as perceived ambitions and expectations. But there are aspects that cut against that actually happening. For one thing, the used to be it for my generation, people got married right out of college. I mean, you'd meet your sweetheart in college, and the guy would be 24, the gal would be 22, and they'd get married. Now we're at the most advanced age for first-time marriages in American history, with first-time brides nowadays marrying at 27, and guys at 29. So
yes.
they've certainly postponed marriage. They may not have discounted it altogether, but there are so many more options for young folks growing up nowadays, and so many other choices that sort of confront them early on, that for lots of reasons, you know, because they want to pursue their career, because they want to, you know, they make a more serious effort at seeing the world or staying single for a while on their own. They postpone what used to be the rites of passage, whether it being getting married or buying a first home or all this stuff that we all used to do as a stage of life that was to be expected. Now a lot of that's being postponed by these younger millennial types, and probably with good reason.
You and I, and this goes back to when we first started having radio interviews together when I lived in Hawaii and was on a couple of different local
You were famous
radio.
In Hawaii.
Well, maybe infamous.
Everybody knew Dr. Diana in Hawaii.
Well, I think it was, I got some attention because I was on the air talking about sex, and there are a lot of people in Hawaii who are a little conservative, and my late husband, and you knew him, Charlie, he had some friends. They were great people, but kind of conservative, and a few of them went back to the early, one girlfriend, her grandparents were given land by the royalty. So these are people that, and I remember she
entrenched,
came on my show.
So to speak, yes.
Well, yeah, don't say names. But she came on my show, and her mother, who goes way back, many generations, I mean her family, said, whatever you do, don't talk about sex on the air. And at that time, it was 50 Plus and Fabulous, a show about successful aging. So we talked about financial stuff, and we did not mention sex. But the reality is that money certainly figures in to lots of relationships, right?
Certainly does. And, you know,
yeah.
And people who are entrenched in their social role maybe, you know, are going to be a little less delighted to hear about other aspects that could rock their boat. You know,
mm-hmm.
I notice when people start to get divorced, the circle of friends closes around in favor of whoever seemed to have been the aggrieved party, and sometimes they don't like the errant husband who was chasing his secretary, or the errant wife who was chasing her tennis coach, or whatever. Married people like to stay around other married people, and it keeps the bonds of society strong.
Yeah,
and understandably so.
Mm-hmm. Understandably so.
But this just got me to thinking. There's a very interesting dynamic that is happening nowadays, where people who are successful in life are the most likely ones to stay married, and both remaining unmarried and getting divorced is more common amongst less educated and lower income people, and the self-selected, sort of well-educated high income still marry at high rates, and they're far less likely to divorce. So you've got sort of a profound marriage differential that's opened up between the rich and the poor, and it's almost, so sociologists seem to think that it's segregating society even further.
Yeah.
And one of the things that's allowed that to happen is social
mm-hmm.
media. You know, you can now go on these sites and say, hey, I want, millionaires only, or I want, they're dating sites, but they're sort of gentrified dating sites that say, hey, I only want somebody who's, got, a certain kind of education or a certain level of affluence, or, the millionaires only dating site. So instead of a situation that used to happen where even if a rich lawyer, met a legal secretary in his office and she was attractive and vivacious, but maybe not as wealthy or as educated as he was. And again, I'm using the obvious gender bias, but, maybe it was a female lawyer meeting the office,
but it's more likely.
But
More likely to be gender specific, the way you first stated it.
Yeah, but you know, at least there was a chance that, you know, somebody who was maybe less educated but had a vivacious personality or whatever would meet somebody in a work context and say, okay, you know, that's the way we all used to meet, you know, with some kind of actual physical, you know, there's got to be somebody you meet. So, you know, you could meet, you know, a waitress in a diner, or you could meet a secretary or, you know, whatever, and think, okay, this is somebody I want to be with. Now, everybody's meeting on these dating sites, and they oftentimes, you know, they literally are selecting out anybody who's not of their same social status. So what you're seeing is a bifurcation in society between, you know, wealthy, educated people staying married, raising families, sending them to all the right schools where they get to be wealthy and continue to then, you know, marry off to other wealthy mm-hmm. people. And some of these options of you know, switching between classes are actually closing off in a weird kind of way. You think that we're in a world that's more open, but the internet is actually allowing people to be more closed off and find people that, you know, that think exactly the way they do. That we're seeing that in the tribalism that's happening in politics, and it's also happening in social media and dating.
Yes, you say that you just to look at, well, to look at the other end of things, marriage may be most important when there is stress in life. And I think we should talk about that. You and I both appreciate John Gottman because he's been studying relationships and marriages for 40 years. And John Gottman says that trust, you need trust. The degree to which you believe your partner has your interests in mind and can listen to you non-defensively. Boy, I bet you've seen that in your office. Very hard for couples to listen to each other non-defensively, even if you can't stand each other in the moment. That becomes really important. John Gottman also says, those who master relationships seem to know the motto, when you're in pain, the world stops and I listen.
Well, that's a crucial time. You know, the benefits of marital friendship and satisfaction do seem to be most clear and most real during middle age, when people are oftentimes experiencing a dip in life satisfaction or most stress. I mean, you know, when you're trying to build up your career, your family demands, that's one of the most stressful periods of your life. And that's when the biggest marital benefits, you know, show themselves, is in high stress environments. And people who are married, you know, it's the two of us against the world. We can handle midlife stress better than those who aren't.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that it does seem that marriages are most important when, you know, when there is stress in life at middle age. It's also, that's the time we go on to talk about whether or not to have kids later on in this show. And that's also a time when most people have the issue of children is right in their, you know, right in their 30s and 40s. And that's when their social groups are around, you guessed it, other people who are married with children. And so that's the time when, you know, when most people are going to want to be married, want to have children, because that's what all their friends are, married and having children. From a parent's socialization standpoint, it's toughest to be childless or unmarried for folks in their late 30s and early 40s, because that's when social isolation tends to peak amongst people without kids. But later on, once the kids are grown, you know, it's no longer a big deal whether, you know, what your friends' grown kids are up to doing, you know, and when you're going to PTA meetings and private school selections and all that stuff, that's when everybody's talking about all the same stuff and the soccer team, you know, being the soccer coach and whatever. That's the time when marriage really does you a lot of good, is when you're building a career, when you're building a family. Later on, it becomes a little bit more of a tricky process to maintain when the participants are starting to, you know, live a little bit more of their separate lives.
But even at the beginning, I've seen it in my practice many times. Many couples carry on dutifully with the task of raising a family, and they show a brave face to the world. and they're secretly stuck in a mild but chronic depressive state, and I call this depressively married.
Well, and that leads to the scenario that we're all familiar with. Maybe me as a divorce lawyer more than most, but we at the Coates and Frye firm here in Honolulu, we get clients coming in all the time saying, "Okay, yeah. I toughed it out through those last 4 or 5 years when I was really unhappy when my kids were in 13, 14, 15, whatever. Now they're 18, gone off to college. Now I'm in the divorce lawyer's office and ready to get divorced. Now the kids have grown."
Exactly. Exactly.
It
would seem that modern marriage has hit a perfect storm, and it seems to be a collision between our biology and our contemporary values regarding marriage and child raising. I mean, you know, the biology. I mean, I felt it. I was very clear when I got married at 30. For someone in my generation, that was really late. But I had a wonderful time in my 20s, traveling the world and having lots of adventures. But I knew I wanted to marry and have children. That was very clear to me. And so I married a really intelligent man. Who he's just brilliant, really, and because I wanted smart genes for my kids. I was very sort of programmed about this.
Self-selecting, good.
Yeah, self-selecting. But there are lots of people that aren't so sure they want to have children. I'm thinking about one couple that I saw, and I'll just give you sort of an overview of the case. So this couple, they were a couple friends admired most. They were intellectual. They were funny. They were professors who taught on the same campus right here in Washington State. They seemed, perfectly matched. But after the birth of their first child, their sex life dropped out. They bickered incessantly. In my office included, although I had limits on that, boundaries, and they both started taking antidepressants. So they told me about this, and 20 years later, they're back in my office. They are in my office, not back in, because I hadn't seen them before, but they're still married, with thriving careers and successful children, but privately, they have been unhappy for a long time. And the husband said, "I used to feel I was the light of her life, and now I feel as though she's annoyed that I'm still here."
Oh, that's a tough one.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And so I have something that I use in my practice called the therapeutic separation, but we don't have to go there right now. But that couple, you know, 20 years ago, they had their first child and they were really unhappy, but they stuck it out. And
that's exactly what used to happen. I mean, everybody did used to just stick it out. And there was a big there was a big social pressure to stick it out, mm-hmm. and there were values mm-hmm. in society, and there was there was religion telling you to stay focused on the family instead of on your own personal fulfillment. But that's all giving way to a lot of individual choice and a lot of individual planning and hedonism really. That's why the baby boomers who are used to having gotten everything their own way for all these years, that's why they are one of the fastest growing cohorts of divorce in society. We've talked about that on your prior shows. You would think that when somebody gets to their mid to late 60s, they would they'd stay married for Christ's sake and just worry about who's going to change their diapers when they get old. But now, baby boomers are out there, they're still running marathons and having traveling around the world and doing all the kind of stuff that they, have always thought was their entitlement all along. And anything that gets in the way of that, whether it be raising children, you know, children take a lot of energy, as anybody who's ever raised them is well aware. And now it's like all that energy is focused on your own happiness and well-being. So it's really these are first world problems. And here this is, I'm kind of skipping around here, but this is an interesting.
Fine.
Here's an interesting set of percentages of all households worldwide who live alone. In Sweden, 47% of people in Sweden live alone and have children on their own. They don't get married. They have what's called paternity, where you just have children out of wedlock. In the middle is Japan, where 31% live alone. Then you get down to an old style agrarian, rural, poor, you know, relatively poor kind of an environment like India, where only 3% of people live alone. And in India, that, you know, all the social requirements are still in place, and the need to conform and all that is and the need to have, you know, four kids to till the fields, you know, in an agrarian or farming community, that, you know, all that stuff has totally changed now that society has become, and the more close you get to first world populations, the fewer kids they want to have. I mean, the birth rates just dropped through the floor in Japan and in Korea and all these other places, whereas it's still high in the developing countries. So, you know, you get to a situation where there's a study out of Japan that showed that under the social and economic systems of modern developed countries, the cost of having a child outweighs the child's usefulness. So nowadays, everybody just wants to keep their options open. We don't have to have kids anymore. We don't have to get married anymore. We don't even have to live in pairs. The more you can afford it, the more you want your own privacy. And there's so many things that are working against the old style institution of marriage that I'm afraid that, you know, one of these days I'm going to be out of work as a divorce lawyer. I'm going to be like an elevator operator or something, where there's no need to have a guy run an elevator anymore. Maybe before long, no need to have a truck driver drive a truck. I mean, it's all just, the world is changing so fast that a lot of the old rules don't seem to apply anymore.
Yes. And you say regarding singlehood, and it could be for many people, you already described Sweden versus Japan and so on, that 80% of those over 50 said that they were content in their singlehood. And they were far from being desperately lonely older people. But you also point out that women do better than men. Would you elaborate on that, Brad?
Well, there's no question about that. There's no question that women are more able to fend on to live on their own. They've built up social networks that are everything from, you know, being a junior league to PTA to, you know, book clubs to whatever. You know, men basically, once they're, you know, we've talked about this in your shows before too. Men develop their relationships based around sports when they're teenagers, and it's, you know, it's who's on the team, or it's who's in your frat house, or it's who's your office friends. You know, women have much more wide, expanded circles of friends. They're much more capable of being alone. Far more guys are all, when I have a divorce client come out of my office, you know, he's likely to get remarried probably, you know, within 3 years. About 70% actually 80% of men get remarried with, you know, and oftentimes in very short time frames. You know, women have built these extensive social circles. They're pursuing hobbies. They're taking classes, joining religious or political, you know, organizations, caring for grandkids. You know, they are, you know, much more diverser. That's not really a word, I know that. But, amongst the previously married, 65% of women say they're not interested in taking another spouse, whereas guys, you know, are very quickly turning around and looking for another new marriage, mainly because, you know, the guys almost feel the need for somebody to take care of them, and women are frankly tired of taking care. You know, that first divorce was enough. They're not dying to turn around and do it again and take care of some other dude. They just soon stay single.
And especially the older guys who, you know, the expression, are perhaps looking for a nurse with a purse.
Yeah, perfect.
They want somebody who can take care of them and who has their own money, too. That would be nice.
Yep. I'm probably not all that far from needing that myself, so if any of your listeners are listening, tell them to give me a call.
You're not. We both belong to the Outrigger Canoe Club, so I'm obviously a non-resident member, but I get the magazines, and there you are winning marathons and swimming meets, swimming in the ocean, and I mean, you stayed really active and in shape, and that's excellent. Bravo.
And I do still have, you know, my own money and my own law firm and my own social life, but, you know, not a lot of guys can. You know, it's really kind of interesting because, you know, if you're sort of a successful middle-aged man, you know, maybe you can attract younger women, maybe you're fine, maybe things can turn out okay for men in that you know, general cohort of demographics. But older men, you know, maybe 60, later fail to remarry, they oftentimes paint a fairly miserable picture of, you know, unshakable isolation and unhappiness. They're much more unhealthy. You know, they can't cook for themselves. They haven't got anybody to, you know, bug them about smoking too much or eating bad food. I mean, there's no question but what's, you know, single men at an older age can begin to suffer. Whereas single women, you know, I love that book, that Prime Time book that Jane Fonda wrote about how she, you know, she doesn't even care about guys anymore at her stage of life, and she's been through some of the best guys imaginable. You know, Ted Turner and Roger Vadim and Tom Hayden, all of her old former spouses, she says she wouldn't swap any of them for her girlfriends nowadays.
Yeah, but
did you
didn't
movie,
say that
club?
In the
did
book.
Did you happen to see that movie?
What?
Did you happen to see that movie, The Book Club?
Yes, I loved it.
Yeah.
There was a lot of wine consumed in the book club.
Yeah. But a lot, you know, a lot of pretty independent older women.
That's right. And but even in that movie, Jane Fonda, the character was still interested in sex. I was a little disappointed when it came out in the tabloids or whatever that she of course she's 80 now, but she'd been so sex positive, and I thought, oh, this is great, because as you know, and as many of my regular listeners know,
you are the epitome of sex positive.
Well, yes, and I'm a real advocate for sex and aging and maintaining your sex life, and it's so healthy for you, and on and on and on. So I was disappointed to see that she had, even her most recent relationship where they were not married, but they were together, I think, 8 years, and they had a good sex life, and now she's ended that relationship, and she's not interested. So, personally, I was a little disappointed because I thought she was a very good role model. But her book, Prime Time, is excellent, and you and I both appreciate her book. You know,
well, she certainly, you know, she epitomizes the fact that women do better than men oftentimes as they grow older and are less interested in getting remarried. They're, you know, women are much more happy to be single than men. Most of the solitary dwellers really are women, and the number of solitary dwellers has gone through the roof. I mean, according to the 2011 census, people who live alone, which is nearly 33 million Americans, make up about 28% of all U.S. households. 28%. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that's a quarter of the people choosing either deliberately or maybe just by circumstance they have to. But they are, you know, people are, it's now much more okay to live alone. There's housing communities dedicated to that. There's, you know, everything used to be built around the family in the suburbs. And, you know, you felt like an outsider if you didn't fit that mode. Now there's plenty of other ways to feel like you're part of your own tribe, even if you stay single forever. And some people are never getting married.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
That is interesting. Something that we haven't yet touched on, but I, going back to Gottman with his 40 years of research, and that's humor. Let's look at humor. So, Gottman's wife, Julie, so she contributed to this, and they noticed that a lot of the couples that were surviving and thriving, that they were laughing a lot. And Gottman, even with his own personal life, because I think Julie Gottman is his third marriage, Gottman had realized the value of friendship and humor to love, because humor soothes couples inside and out during conflict. Gotta have a sense of humor, and that may take you through the fight, the conflict.
I think, you know, when I survey Wahinis, which is, of course, Hawaiian for women, as to what kind of qualities they look for in guys, and I do a lot of public speaking in support of my book, Divorce with Decency, and I'm kind of a, you know, I'm well known as a relationships kind of guy here in Honolulu. What you hear back is that the sense of humor is one of the single most attractive criteria for women. They are really, I think, you know, I mean, women want guys who can communicate, period. And, you know, and in fact, guys who have lost the fine art or never developed the fine art of basic communication are they're the biggest losers at all in the game of romance, because that's what women want. They want somebody they can communicate with. And humor is kind of a way to communicate. It's certainly a way to diffuse, you know, the negative aspects of communication. If you're about to get sideways with somebody and instead you can joke your way out of it, that's a real saving grace. And, you know, I mean, I think people that are funny in general are fun to be around, but sometimes you can really use it to really improve your communication and to minimize the risk, the downside risk of blown communication.
Yes, yes, indeed. And, of course, one of the things that I love about you and many love about you is that you're funny. You have a great sense of humor.
Yeah, but looks aren't everything. Yeah.
So I'm thinking about two older guys, George Burns and Groucho Marx, and they made jokes about their aging and some of their difficulties. And George Burns said, "Everything that goes up must come down, but there comes a time when not everything that's down can come up," referring to his penis and erections. And then an aging Groucho Marx said, He's leaving the poker game, and he had regular, apparently, when he was alive, he had lots of poker games at his home. He said, "So long, fellas, I guess I'll go upstairs now and see if I can bend one in." Of course, this was way before we had Viagra and Cialis and the other ED drugs, which are, we're not going to get off into sex, except today. There are plenty of shows when we do talk about sex, but sex seems to be, and men can get help now with ED, and that's great, but sex is so important. It turns out to be one of the major factors for sexual satisfaction is the major factor in satisfying marriages. So, is a satisfying sex life.
Well, it certainly
urge to merge.
It certainly is for guys. I don't want to sound like a sexist pig, but I think women who disregard, I know a lot of, I get them in my office all the time, you know, with a female client will come in and say, "Well, you know, I need to get divorced," or "My husband's, you know, taking off with some other woman," or whatever. And you know, they'll describe their sex life, and she'll say, "Well, you know, I mean, I don't know why he feels the need for it. For me, it's painful, and I don't like it, and I just soon skip it. But he just keeps wants to keep going, and if he can't have it with me, I guess he's going to go have it with somebody else." And that's, that just ignoring the male drive for sex is precarious, now it's gotten even weirder, I think, and I don't want to get too far afield here, but basically there's a couple of things that have really changed. I mean, men, I think, are oftentimes, you know, women stay sexy up to the point where they, you know, have the kids, and, you know, and then it begins to drop off a little bit. And certainly, I've surveyed enough clients to know that men seem to think it's more important a lot longer than women do in marriages. But now it's kind of gotten even squirrelier, because now you've got, with all the prevalence of pornography, you've got a situation where sex is getting kinkier, the thought about sex is getting kinkier and more one-sided and more objectifying of women and treating them as objects rather than intimate lovers. And, you know, because you see all this crazy shit on the porn stuff, and then you come home and expect it out of your wife. I mean, it's just really deleterious to a marriage. And the other thing that is, you and I mentioned this in a prior conversation, and I forget who it was, but it was a pretty well-known feminist that was saying that she thought these erectile drugs are now, you know, supposedly enabling men to keep going even longer than they used to. So if you had a 50 or 60 year old wife and said, okay, I put up with sex for, you know, X number of years, and I didn't really like it as much as he did, but I went with it, and now all of a sudden he's taking Viagra and he just wants to jump on me, and it's and then all the foreplay's gone and all the caring seems to be gone, and I'm just an object for a doormat for him. It's just, you know, it's and now it's continuing on to, you know, to age 70 or age 80, or you get, you know, I remember, you know, when Hugh Hefner was praising the virtues of Viagra. Anyway, this feminist was saying, hey, this has turned into a really bad deal for women, because guys are basically abusing it, and between porn and Viagra and the erectile drugs, you've got men. Whether they're able to actually pull it off or not, they still think they're Superman, and they act accordingly. And sometimes it gets downright dominant and disconcerting to the women.
You know, I was on the air in Honolulu in April of 98, and that was when the FDA approved Viagra. And I had a urologist on my show, and Eddie Sherman, who was willing to... Oh, dear Eddie Sherman. Those of us...
Columnist?
Who,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's passed on, but he was a columnist for like 50 years, and the three-dot columnist in Hawaii.
Right,
and
right.
He was just... He was a wonderful man. I knew him some, and so he agreed to come on, and he's also... It was diabetic, and he... So I had a wonderful conversation between the urologist and Eddie Sherman, who was right away going to use Viagra. He had a happy marriage, and he was impotent and wanted to get it up for his wife. So he was willing to talk about that. It was within several months that after that, so this is 1998, that Time magazine started reporting Viagra divorces. And it was a lot of what you were talking about before, Brad, that women were, you know, women had been ignored. They weren't treated well by their husbands, and now their husbands can get an erection, and the wife is dry and has pain, and, of course, there are solutions for that, usually. And she's saying, what? you haven't been nice to me, and now you want to put it in? And so there were the Viagra divorces, and the guy who wanted to have wanted to then play because he could have erections. Anyway, there were those Viagra divorces.
Well, I think that's true, and I think it's like I say, the confluence of porn. You know, porn is much more prevalent amongst men than women, although it's in both genders, but. You know, but it's a totally, and again, we've talked about this on your shows before, you know, it's a weird warping of sex in general. I mean, you know, women obviously want sex that has to do with communication and true love, whereas guys just want sex. And so you've got a situation with porn where they think, okay, you know, this is the way it ought to be, and I ought to just, you know, have my erection and shove it in anywhere I damn well please, and, you know, and women are going, wait a second, you know, this is not, you know, I'd rather talk. And we've always talked about how, you know, men can have an episode, you know, a fulfilling sexual episode within, you know, 3 to 4 minutes, whereas women, it takes 15 to 20 minutes to really enjoy it. And, you know, all of a sudden, the Viagra has you erect right away, you're ready right away, skip the foreplay, and, you know, it's just not a lot of fun for the females, I don't think. And then if you tie that in with the fact that he expects her to behave like, you know, an 18-year-old porn star, that really gets to be elusive.
There,
that's where sex therapy really be. If,
Yes.
You know, your profession, sex therapy, should become all the more important, because these are issues that are going to resolve largely around sex and are going to have to be figured into my area, which is relationships, and, you know, more so than they were when, you know, couples just, you know, sort of, you know, informally agreed that, you know, we're just going to start skipping sex and we're, you know, now we're going to focus on the grandkids or whatever, and instead... Now the guys keep thinking that they're Superman, and the women are, like I say, they've gone onto a higher plane by then.
Well, there's another issue here, and that is when couples do have sex, there is a great discrepancy in their enjoyment of it. It turns out that, well, this was one study, men have orgasms 6 times more often than their partners. 6 times more often.
That wouldn't surprise me.
So this contributes to the sexual chasm between partners. And we can go back to some Gottman work. The Gottmans found that a full 3 years after childbirth, women report feeling not very sexual and want sex. They don't want sex more than maybe every week or every other week, while men report feeling extremely sexual, wanting sex every day.
Yeah.
So
yep.
This is a huge discrepancy, really. And it keeps me in business.
I think it certainly will.
Yeah. But I find it very satisfying, because when couples do start having better sex and a better relationship, because we sometimes have to do the relationship work along with or even first, then it's just satisfying. It's wonderful to see people happier with a better relationship and better sex.
Well, so, you know, better sex can certainly turn around a relationship, and it's one of the harder things for couples to even, you know, address or believe or respond to or whatever, but it certainly is, it's an important aspect of it.
Yes, it sure is. It's
and it may be getting
important.
More important all the time. You know, like I say, if everybody lives longer and thinks that they should stay sexy longer, it's going to be interesting to see how that works.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You write about in terms of parenting, because that's so again. Because some people are listening to this live. Most people will listen to it archived. But this is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I'm having a discussion with Brad Coates, who is the author of Divorce with Decency. And we are talking about the pros and cons of 3 of life's most crucial choices: to marry or not, to remarry or not, to parent or not. And these are really pretty crucial choices that can affect your whole life, for sure.
Well, we kind of covered the first two about, you know, about whether or not to get married, and, you know, whether or not to remarry. The you know, basically everybody still wants to get married. Everybody still wants to have kids, at least, you know, avowedly so. That's still everybody's on, you know, it's a bucket list item for, you know, not, mm-hmm. You're not kicking the bucket at the time you get married, hopefully. But you know, it's a goal of you know, most modern people. But in first world marriage, in first world societies, it's becoming less of a huge issue and more of a, you know, optional issue. In developing countries, you know, it's still the rule of the road, you know, largely because so much of society relies on families. Part of the demise is not only that economics get better and give you more options, but, you know, the breakdown of religion and you know, the sort of cultural constraints that used to be there in society are, you know, those are, everything's more free form now. You don't have to admit what gender you are anymore. You don't have to use, you know, even the right bathroom. You just, you know, everybody gets to do whatever they want. And we're raising a whole generation of kids now that for whom that's really the case. I mean, you know, you read about these parents that just refuse to put down a gender on their birth certificate because they want their children to make their own free choice. I mean, it's really...
Well, I think that's silly.
Well, it seems a little silly to me, but, you know, we're probably too old to understand. Anyway,
In my practice, I wouldn't say that because there's no room for judgment as a therapist. You do what? Or you did that? But personally, I think that's a little silly.
Yeah, and personally, I agree. But you've got situations where basically the fact that all bets are off on any kind of social rules or regulations or, you know, expectations or cultural uniformity or, you know, that's fallen by the wayside and now everybody just does whatever they want, that's going to have some interesting effects on society. So the marriage rate's going to probably slow down. The remarriage rate's probably going to slow down. The fact that you know, it used to be that if you were a single, you know, an old, doddering old single man, you were just really out in left field compared to all your, you know, married couples celebrating their 50th anniversary. Nowadays, very few couples make it to their 50th anniversary. And you know, there's all kinds of, you know, swingles clubs and dating websites for, you know, people over 70. I mean, it's just everything is segmented thanks to social media and I don't know if you would call it the breakdown or the expansion of social, you know, understanding, but there's just nothing really to hold anybody back anymore. So fewer people are going to get married. Fewer people are going to stay married. There's just too many more options. Internet's causing all that, and the changes of social media have changed a lot of it. And the next one is, what about parenting? And it's interesting. Mm-hmm. There's some really interesting research that shows that, you know, couples that have children have more stress than, although everybody, you know, thinks they want children, the reality is that even that's sort of diminishing. And there's fewer people having kids. There's certainly fewer people in the first world having kids. And you've got a situation now where I can just read you some statistics if we've got some time. Yeah, we still got some time.
We got time.
One of the things that just really struck me is the advice columnist Ann Landers had conducted a famous reader survey in the 1970s in which she asked her readers, you know, who had children, but if you had it to do over again, would you have children? She receives 10,000 responses, and much to her dismay, 70% of those who had children say no, they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do it again if they had the choice, which is, you know,
exactly the opposite
of what's supposed to be gospel in American society, right?
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. So
70% said no, they wouldn't have children again. And this is way before the internet and all the social media. Ann Landers was for those who are listening who are younger, Ann Landers was a huge columnist, syndicated
sort of
in many,
Dear
many
Abby
papers.
Kind. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Dear Ann, Dear so Abby, it's the same. Well, Abby was her sister.
Right.
So her question was, if you had it to do over again, would you have children? And she got 10,000 responses. 70% said no. That is amazing. I'm very glad I had children, but I'm, you know, I'm just one person. But I think
most people who have had children who have had them turn out well, or, you know, would easily say that.
Well, but that's true.
part of the problem is nowadays you have kids, and it's not like you get to really determine the outcome the way you used to. I mean, it used to be that you know, you would raise your children either strictly or not so strictly or whatever, but the rules of your household would determine the way your kids grew up, and now it's whoever your kids are interacting with on their phones are going to have more impact than the parents are as to how they're going to turn out. And if the parents try to crack down too hard, the next thing you know, they're calling Child Protective Services or hiring their own lawyers against their parents. I mean, it's just wacky. You should see what I see in my custody cases, where these kids are almost encouraged to say which parent they'd rather be with in a contested custody
case.
Really? And they just sell out to the highest bidder. Well, Mom, if you got me a car for Christmas, I'll tell the social worker that I want to be with you. I mean, it's astounding.
The manipulation. These kids have learned it probably from a very early age. They're probably spoiled.
It's unbelievable. So now the psychologists have actually done more studies and found that people are actually less happy when they're interacting with their own children than they are when they're pursuing other activities like shopping, eating, or even watching television. So it turns out that children really have a surprisingly small impact upon people's overall happiness, and apparently it's a small negative impact at that. Although less of a negative impact for moms than for dads, it seems that there's more. The children are more likely to say that the highest influence in their life has been their mother, not their father. And the most important influence has always been the mom, still to this day. So dads are sometimes shunted aside a little bit. As they get older, there are also studies that show that moms are sort of preferred over dads over time, with 47% of kids saying that moms are their most influential relationship, only 20% for dads. And then there's a New York Times article that says daughters and granddaughters replace hubby as the woman's best friend, pointing out that while men tend to maintain a wife as their closest confidant throughout their adult lives, women's focus shifts from their spouses to their adult daughter or to their grandkids. So you've got a situation where there's more and more people that are choosing to be childless sort of by choice and opting for individual personal satisfaction rather than trying to keep the family unit intact. So again, even parenting, along with the institution of marriage, the institution of child rearing, has also become somewhat precarious.
You know, that New Yorker article that you alluded to, I think that's got to be so sad for the father, for the man in the relationship, because, you know, here his wife has been involved with the children quite a lot, but then if she switches over, here's the man being older, and she switches to being closer to her young adult daughter and grandkids, he's got to feel even more left out and
more lonely.
I think that's really sad.
Relegates the husband to a new and perhaps unfamiliar second place status within his own family. I actually have had clients who have come home after a nice day of work to a relationship that's lasted 40 years and found a note on the door saying, "I've left to go to Mobile, Alabama, where our daughter has moved to, because I'm more interested in watching my grandkid grow up than I am hanging out with you as my aging, you know, farting and drooling husband." I guess, I don't know.
It's
pretty shocking, really.
Mm.
And you want to hear a really shocking statistic? London School of Economics did a study. They found that the more intelligent women are, the more less likely they are to become mothers. They actually found that an increase of 15 IQ points decreases the odds of a woman becoming a mother by 25%. So the smarter you are, the more you've got a future. You know, you can see where that leads. The more you've got a future of your own. I mean, it used to be when I went to law school, there were probably more than 10% of the class was made up of women. You know, 90% of all the kids coming out of law schools were, you know, now it's over 50% are women. So now you know, a gal's got her career set sight on being the partner in the law firm or being a judge or being whatever her aspirations are. And, you know, so she postpones. Maybe it's not even done intentionally, but she postpones having kids for a while and then a while longer, and then she can't have them. And then she takes fertility drugs and then suddenly has twins. You know, there's all kinds of interesting spin-offs of how this all works.
Or she freezes her eggs. I have a cousin whose daughter did that, and she's now about to deliver, but she froze her eggs. And she's apparently happily married and going to give birth, who knows, anytime now. But she successfully froze her eggs, knowing that she really wanted to focus on her career.
Well, if somebody's smart enough to do that, more power to them. But you can see what happens to, you know, just the average person who just says, "Well, I'll have kids next year. I'll have kids next year. I'll have kids next year," and then
that's
doesn't.
That's right. That's right. Exactly.
And then you got the cost of raising kids. They figure that if you've got a household income below, say, $100,000 a year, you spend about $234,000 to raise a kid till age 18. If your household income is over $100,000, then the cost, you know, and then you send them to private school and have tutors and violin lessons, and it goes up to $390,000. So somewhere in the range of, you know, $300,000 to $350,000 is probably what it's going to cost you to raise a kid. And some people just do the math and say, "Hey, I'd rather buy a house." So it's really an interesting situation where even having kids now, which again used to be along with marriage and, you know, buying an early house and moving to the suburbs, you know, now all these young kids want to live in, they want to live in urban environments. Nobody wants to live in the suburbs anymore. They don't even want to own a car. They want to take Uber. It's just all these things that used to be the milestone of achieving independence and charting out your own course in life, and fitting in with society's, you know, constructs. It's all, the bets are all off on all that stuff. So it's really pretty wild.
It's pretty wild. I've been seeing a number of couples in their 30s who are financially doing well, you know, software engineers in Seattle and so on, and they'll say, yeah, we don't want to have kids. We want to have the freedom to travel. It's the hedonism thing that you pointed out earlier, that we want to pay attention to our own pleasure, and we're just not willing to. But then I always say, well, it's good if you know what you want and you're clear about it, but let's explore it a little bit more, just to be sure. There are a lot of couples deciding. Mm-hmm.
Sociologists have talked about it, you know, America becoming the, you know, the basically the cult of the individual. And it's not just America. Like I say, I gave you the statistics on Sweden, and, you know, I mean, it's first world society where people, you know, there's no, you know, with the waning of religion and the waning of other constraints on how you had to behave, anything goes. So, it's just whatever you want to do. So over the past half century, the average age of a first-time mother has climbed 4 years, for example. So you know you're not having kids till you're, you know, your late 30s or 40s, whereas you used to have them in your late 20s.
Brad, I know the music's going to come on here momentarily. I just want our listeners to know you'll be back again November the 20th.
Can't wait.
Yeah, me too. And you had a great idea when we had a discussion off the air yesterday. And your idea for November 20th show was what?
That was yesterday. I can hardly remember. I think we were talking about...
I wasn't taking notes. So anyway, let's surprise the listeners. Be sure and tune in because it'll be just a wonderful show, as it always is with Brad Coates. I think that, just to wind this up, that we expect more from our marriages, but feed them less.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, and we've also experienced the end of go out and play and don't come home till after dinner era. And that has sucked the life out of a lot of marriages. You know, do you remember your parents saying that? I remember that. Go out and play and don't come back till dinner. It's
now
a different
world. Now, if you do
that,
you're reported to Child Protective Services.
Yeah. Okay, there is the music. Thank you, Brad.
November
20th,
we'll be back.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Diana. Aloha, everybody.
Thank you.
E se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro autore, ma i tuoi piedi, ta 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 ta, ma i tuoi piedi, ta 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 ta, happy feet, ta ta ta, happy feet, ta ta ta, happy feet, oh, oh, I love it,
love it,
happy feet. Telefonerai probabilmente a me tuo schiavo d'amore, ti divertirai, che traguardi vuoi farmi trovare?